It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Do you feel that new energy? I mean, we know that people that you have retained are outstanding at what they do. Yeah. You know, Jeff Greenberg and Breslow are wonderful executives. But do you feel a new sense of energy in the front office?
I think everyone does. Yeah, I think you know, given the trade deadline last year, you know, and given some of the new faces, there is a sense of newness to the office. You know, both in, you know, what we're trying to do on the field and what we're trying to do in the office. And I think that's really valuable. I think that we can all learn from each other, and having new voices and new perspectives is really valuable in that. And so, I mean, I'm as energized as I've been in a long time. It's a fun time to try to, you know, figure out this puzzle that'll get us back to winning a World Series.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. And that was Bruce talking with Jed Hoyer on the Marquee Sports Network earlier this week at the GM meetings in Carlsbad, California. Bruce, nice job with all of the TV duties you held down this past week, and you got to the core of a lot of the Cubs issues. And the Cubs issues are what we're going to address next with our guest from the Sun-Times, who joins us on the guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find Russell Dorsey, the beat writer of the Cubs for the Sun-Times. Good morning, Russ. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well. How would you describe what you heard out at the GM meetings this week as it pertains to the Cubs and their priority list this offseason?
Well, obviously they addressed starting pitching coming in to the week, and they were one of maybe two teams to make a move, with the other being the Dodgers acquiring Andrew Heaney in free agency. But, yeah, they wanted to come in and really attack the starting pitching area of need. That was their biggest weakness last year. And adding a guy like Wade Miley to that mix, to that group, to that room is really important. You get a guy who's a veteran, who's had success, and was a really good starting pitcher last year, despite the fact that the Reds just let him walk over $1 million. That's going to be an important add for them. Obviously, they want to add some more starting pitching, preferably guys that can get a little bit more swing and miss. So that's definitely still on their list. And then adding some more power to that mix with the expected inclusion of Universal DH next season, I think that's another thing they would like to add here in the next couple of months.
So, Russ, when we hear Jed talk to us, and he's an open book, he's a really great guy to communicate with. What sense do you get as far as being able to project if it's going to be a couple-year rebuild, or will there be a superstar in the mix along the way? In other words, because of the fact that he talks to us and says that we do have vast resources, but that we're going to be prudent about it, where does that lead you? How many are there brick walls that you run into trying to project exactly what that means and how they're going to go about it?
Well, yeah, I would say that they probably think that it's not going to be a 4-5 year type of thing like we saw before. I think fans get a little anxious when you hear the word rebuild or retool, because you saw how long it took for the Cubs to get to that point of their playoff window. I think it's a couple of different things. I think one of them being if you want to build through free agency, I think that's a little bit more challenging, just in a purely in a sense of there are going to be some guys who are available who come from places like L.A. where you win all the time, places like Houston where you win all the time, obviously referring to guys like Correa and Seager, where if I'm looking at potential places to go, I want to keep winning. Like, and looking at the Cubs coming off their first 90-loss season since 2014, those guys might take you off of their list before you even get to make a call. So I think they'll try to add, but I don't know if that big-name guy is going to be walking in the door for a season or two. And because of that, I do think it'll be maybe a year and a half, 2 years before you really see them back in that, you know, competitive window.
Talking with Russell Dorsey, covers the Cubs for the Sun-Times here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Russ, very curious to get your perspective on this, because talking to people who cover baseball and cover the Cubs specifically, I don't know if there's a cross-section or a consensus of opinion here. When you look at what the Braves did, when you look at what the Cardinals mm-hmm. did, when you look at how they were in relation to where the Cubs were in July, did you have a moment in October or late September where you thought, oh, man, had the Cubs decided to go a different route and maybe go the unorthodox route with some of these contracts and make a run for it or do this or do that, they could be in contention, they could have snuck in the playoffs, and then who knows, because the Braves said that's a question worth asking to some people. Who knows? Because they got in, and then they're celebrating. So did you have that moment with the Cubs, or were those apples and oranges?
Yeah, sure. I think that's a logical thought to have. I think the Cubs situation, as far as the contracts with Brian Baez and Rizzo, kind of, you know, it was a little apples and oranges. But I think the fact still remains that when you get it, right, when you give yourself an opportunity, you have some quality starting pitching, you have a bullpen that can compete in October, and when you look at the Braves, that was the thing that carried them. Besides the offense, besides the power, they had a bullpen that every night you were just like, those guys are going to be nails, and they can go out there and win you a ball game. But yeah, you know, they add Jock Peterson, they add Jorge Soler, they add Eddie Rosario, and those guys come out and hit 12 homers in October and really carry that offense after Ronald Acuna Jr. it was out for the season with the ACL tear. So, yeah, I think in this era of being competitive and wanting to see more teams be competitive, I think this is a really good thing happening before the start of probably a CBA fight looming, where it's like, look, yes, we understand that teams want to be financially responsible and that you can't just throw money at your problems and all that. But at the same time, if you try, really good things happen, and you can win the World Series like the Braves showed us this year.
Russ Dorsey with us from the Sun-Times for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. And Russ, when you look at Ian Happ, to you, who is Ian Happ as a baseball player? What does he represent as far as currency for the Chicago Cubs?
I think that's a really good question, Bruce, and I think that's something that the Cubs and Ian are still asking themselves. I think if you asked Ian, he'd say that the player that he showed he was over the last 2 months of the season is the player he is, and I mean, it's hard to argue with the numbers that he put up. He was one of the best hitters in baseball over the last 2 months, but if you're the Cubs, you're looking at it like, all right, yeah, you were awesome, but we need that consistency over 2 months, because let's say Ian is that player, you know, from the start of the season. Maybe we're not having a conversation about the Cubs adding, right? Maybe we're not always having this conversation about, all right, what does the Cubs outfield look like? Does it have Ian in it? Is Ian out of it? So I think this is going to be, and it feels like we say this a lot, like I think this is going to be a big year for Ian in terms of what is his fit here in Chicago and establishing himself, continuing to establish himself as a big league outfielder. When you come in and you set a career high in homers, slugging, and all these different things, you're like, okay, this is a guy that you can build around. But with a guy like Brendan Davis knocking at the door, I still think it's important for Ian to continue this going into 2022 and beyond as the Cubs start to move some pieces around.
Russ, what's your impression of the new Cubs general manager, Carter Hawkins?
I think Carter's a smart guy that's from an organization where, you know, you had to be careful with the resources. You had to build from within because you weren't going to be able to go out there and add like teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I think that is something that you guys, you know, talked about in, or with the clip from Bruce in the open, where Jed's talking about wanting to get different perspectives. And I think Carter brings that. And everything they've done from a front office standpoint coming into the offseason was to get a lot of different perspectives from different people, the new AGMs, and getting the pitching infrastructure aligned with, you know, the hitting infrastructure, getting that aligned with David Ross as the manager, as the head of that, and getting all those things on the same page. I think that's been something that's been really important for Jed as they go into this new wave, and now they try to turn this thing around. It can't just be with, you know, spending in free agency. It can't just be with, you know, how you draft and develop guys. And so I think they wanted to revitalize how they did things. You know, after the World Series, things got a little stale, obviously. And they wanted to inject some life into that. And I think Carter is a guy who comes from a situation where it's like, look, we got to be smart in how we do things. And there are different ways to find that same result of winning. And I think that's something that Jed's really excited about. And so I'm interested to see how that works going forward.
So we had the 60-game season with David Ross as the manager, and they got to the playoffs, and you know, they were blown out by Miami, and that was it. What did Russell Dorsey learn about David Ross in his first full year as manager of the Cubs that you didn't know from that 60-game season?
I think he wasn't afraid to, you know, make the tough call at times, whether that's, hey, this guy isn't going to be in our rotation anymore, or this guy's been struggling, I'm going to sit him for a couple of days. He wasn't afraid to make that move. In a 60-game season, he wasn't necessarily – I don't think he could do that, because it's like, hey, if a guy's not playing for 5 days, it's a pretty big chunk of a 60-game schedule. I think the longer season allowed him to see things play out, see how something works, and then if it didn't, he could make an adjustment off of that. And I think – and he even talked about it a little bit, like, that 60-game season didn't even give him a chance to, like, really manage like he had wanted to, and you figure out what his managerial style actually was. I think he's a guy that likes to be aggressive in terms of putting lineups together. And I think we always knew he was going to be a personable guy coming in his years here in Chicago. But I think at the same time, players respect him. And I think that's something, as we watch going forward, he's a player's manager. He played for player's managers, guys like Bobby Cox, and I think that's who he wants to be. But I still think, hey, this is a young manager in the game. This is a guy that didn't have managerial experience before 2020. And so coming in and getting this first full year, and look, there's a lot of managers around the game that would have had a tough time with if they given the circumstances that Rossi had. So I think considering the 2020 season, considering that all his superstar players were traded at the trade deadline, I think he's done a pretty decent job at it. And so getting back on track and seeing how his managerial style, continues to unfold, I think that'll be something to watch as the Cubs try to turn this thing around.
All right, Russ, so for asking you one of those yes-no poll questions you guys like to ask in the Sun Times, and the question is, yes or no, the Cubs will spend $100 million on a free agent this offseason. How would you answer, and if the answer is yes, what position?
It's a good question. If I had to say yes, I would say it would be a shortstop, but I don't think they're spending $100 million on one guy this offseason. Okay. If you were just going to ask me straight up, yes or no, $100 million on one guy, I would say no.
What if it was Baez? Would that be an exception?
I think it would be what Javi and his representatives, if the market came back to the Cubs and you got him for a reasonable price,
guys,
and you could pencil him in at shortstop, every day for the next 5-6 years?
Guys,
sure, that would be something I would think about. But I think if there's a list I was making of the shortstops I would want, it would probably go Correa, Seager, and depending on whose market comes back to you, a tie between Baez and Story.
Story. Russ, look, I respect what you're saying here, but I said $100 yeah. million dollars almost for a reason, because I don't – is Javi Baez still a $100 million player?
I think so. I think the market shakes out well for Javi, because everybody's not going to get Correa. Everybody's not going to get Seager. And so the teams that are left without a chair are going to be like, all right, Javi, Trevor Story.
I agree with David, really I agree with Russ that you might not think it because of what you saw this year. But look at the fact that he's still an elite player at a position that needs elite players at age 29. So, at the end of the year, while Rizzo was floundering the last 30 games, and so was Bryant, Baez was having the best part of his year, and I think there's a lot of interest.
Okay, so let me ask you both, and to start with Russ, and before we let you go, Russ, I appreciate your time. If the Cubs are pivoting away from this idea where it's all swing and miss and feast or famine, they want to be a higher contact team, how do you do that by bringing back somebody who represented what you're trying to get away from?
That's a very good question, David. I touched on that a little bit in the Sun Times today. You bring in Magical, right, in the trade at the deadline. You have Nico Horner, who they still believe is going to be an everyday player. Where he plays, I don't know if they're sure about that yet, but they think those guys are a really important part of changing that offensive profile. Then you have a guy like Frank Schwindel, who will likely be their starting first baseman next year. Very high contact that also included very hard contact, which is what you need. You don't just want guys just, you know, making contact to make contact. So I think they feel like they've adjusted as a lineup. I think you can't have 4 or 5 guys like that in a lineup, right? You can have 1 or 2 if the other guys around those guys can still make contact. I understand your argument, though, and I do think that's something that they would consider going in. Like, all right, we've seen this guy his entire career. And to me personally, I think Javi's an interesting case because, like, you know, he's an elite player today. But I would be concerned at 35, 36, as the bat speed starts to go away, where he's already been a swing and miss guy. If the bat speed goes away, you could be looking at a 250-plus strikeout guy, easy, and the batting average is going to go way down. So I'm sure that they're asking that question that you're asking right now.
And what I say to that, in closing with Russ, is you have to have an anchor at shortstop to build around. You must do that. He's a young enough guy that I think you can get 5 really good years out of a guy that loves to perform, loves to compete, and would love to consider himself a Hall of Famer of the future. I think you get your money's worth with Javier Baez, even though the points you make, David, are really great ones about the fact that, but you're not going to have perfect players at every position.
You're not. I just don't want my anchor to sink the offense, Bruce. I don't know that that's what I'm looking for in terms of a fresh start by bringing somebody back.
See, Russ, what happens here, all we do is argue on this show. It's just the way it is. We really appreciate you joining us and bringing a lot of insight to the show today. Thanks a lot, and I'll be seeing you soon, hopefully, at the winter meetings.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Russ. Yeah. Russ Dorsey from the Sun Times. That was a quality Russ cast, Bruce. I know that he is known hashtag Russ cast on Twitter.
Russ is such a talented writer.
He is.
And with those pipes and his thought process, I'm a little worried about my job right now.
He does a terrific job, but so do you, Bruce, and you have plenty of more insight to share when we come back. It's our favorite new segment. I don't know how new it is anymore, but we are going to get to it. Chicago Bound here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score inside the clubhouse.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We the people of the ballpark are all in on baseball. We deserve dingers and dogs, sunshine and a beat, a place to take it all in and let it all out. Baseball for the people. Baseball is something else. Visit MLB.com/tickets and spend this summer with us. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
I'm gonna tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm gonna stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
What new star players may be joining the Cubs and White Sox in 2022? David and Bruce explore the free agent and trade market as the offseason takes shape. Will it be Max Scherzer putting up zeros at 35th and Bill Veeck Drive? Or Carlos Correa hitting long balls at Clark and Addison? You and the guys discuss possible offseason MLB moves and speculate who may be Chicago bound at 312-644-6767 on Inside the Club. Clubhouse.
Gotta love that music. That means it's time for Chicago Bound, our segment that looks at players maybe coming to town for the White Sox or the Cubs. Bruce Levine and David Haw here until 11 on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And our first subject of speculation this week is this guy.
He brings a 5.75 ERA over his last four starts into this one. Not quite as good lately. Jimmy!
That was the highlight from Marcus Semien, setting a record for home runs by a second baseman with Toronto earlier this season. And Bruce, we've talked about him before, but it merits talking about him again based on what you learned or overheard or found out at the GM meetings in California.
Well, in between some of Scott Boras's one-liners, I was able to get in a question or two, and I said, are you planning on meeting with the White Sox? You have great players. They are a team that is very close to being a World Series champion. Do any of your players fit? And he said, flat out, having a meeting tonight with the Chicago White Sox, it wasn't, I believe, about Chris Bryant. I believe it was about Marcus Semien. And why Marcus Semien, David? Marcus Semien is a 31-year-old middle infielder who played all-star shortstop for the Oakland A's for a number of years and was an all-star shortstop, a second baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays this year, and also a finalist at second base for a gold glove. Marcus Semien came up in the Chicago White Sox organization. Marcus Semien is known as one of the great makeup guys to go along with quality players in the game. Marcus Semien would fit in seamlessly and beautifully with the Chicago White Sox because not only does he bring the big bat and could play and would play second base, but he would also give you an all-star backup to Tim Anderson if anything happened there. So a 4 or 5 year deal for Tim, for Marcus Semien would make sense to me if they're willing to come up with the cash.
Bruce, the one thing you said there that stood out among all the rest, but I don't know if it's just me or if it even will matter in any negotiation with Scott Boras, but the makeup, the composition. We're talking about a professional athlete that the White Sox know very well, and they know very well from experience. They didn't just draft him once. They drafted him twice. They drafted him in 2008 in the 34th round when he was coming out of high school and going to go to Cal, but he let everybody know he was going to go to Cal, and he was a risk to draft at that point, but he went back into the pool. And then they drafted him again 3 years later, 2011, in the 6th round. And they drafted him and they developed him, Bruce, and they found out what kind of young man he is, what kind of professional he turned into. He came from an athletic family. He grew up out there in California, and he was a guy that they came to appreciate his professionalism and his approach. Does that matter in any negotiation? It may matter to the White Sox, but what role will it play if you're Scott Boras and you're the agent looking for the bottom dollar?
Here's where it matters. And again, you know, I'm not spending Jerry Reinsdorf's money. He won't let me. I've tried it before, and he always said, no, you're not spending my money for me. You know, the media is not directing us as to where we're going to go about a guy. But with Semien, it's important with what they've developed here with their group, that somebody comes in that's a star that automatically fits with the group, that doesn't try to take over, that doesn't have bad habits, that is not on his own plan. Okay, David, it's important that this guy comes in and is just a ball player. And regardless of whether Marcus Semien makes $8 million or $12 million or eventually $23 million a year times 5 or 6 or 7 years, that's what you're going to get every day. You're going to get a regular guy who's a great teammate, a great communicator, and a great representative for your team. So in this case, and this team, yes, it makes sense for Marcus Semien with the Chicago White Sox. And you don't have to stick with all your other position players. You can move a position player.
Bruce, before we get to what the other Cubs need will be and the Cubs player that we'll speculate about this week, will the White Sox be outbid for Marcus Semien? And if they are, who are the teams in contention for a guy who might go to the highest bidder?
Well, they're all the teams that you've heard about. I mean, obviously the Yankees, obviously the Los Angeles Dodgers, obviously the Toronto Blue Jays would like to have him back. There are so many teams out there that are looking for a top middle infielder, and the versatility that he brings is really essential when you already have a good shortstop or second baseman in an organization. So, we're going to see how the chips fall. As Russ talked about with us in our last segment, you know, there are 5 really good shortstops out there, but none of them outside of Semien and Baez are flexible to play the other position. And I think only Semien would be accepting of it. I don't think that Baez, other than playing for the Mets, would be accepting of signing a big deal and playing anywhere but shortstop.
I agree with you, Bruce. I think that Marcus Semien, you could argue, could be the White Sox number one priority this offseason, and they could justify the expense of bringing him because of the way that he fits and because of what he's capable of doing in the field and certainly in that lineup. So that is our White Sox source of speculation this week. With the Cubs, it comes down to this guy.
And the 3-1 pitch from Kimbrel to Correa. Line to right. Garcia turns around and can't find it. 2 runs are going to score on an opposite field double from Correa.
Sorry, Sox fans, that was Carlos Correa hitting a double against the Sox in the ALDS Game 2. Everybody remembers that all too well, Bruce. Carlos Correa will be the number one free agent sought after this offseason. I think there was a poll of 10 Major League executives on MLB.com, and he was, I think maybe 12, and he came up number one on 7 of the 12. And we understand why. How realistic is it for the Cubs to, number one, pursue him, and number two, get him?
Well, I think it's a possibility. I think that, you know, as Russ and I talked about, and as we talked to Jed Hoyer at the GM meetings, there's a sense that there certainly is money for that. And the exception to a guy like Correa, or if you talk about Seager, they're 27 years old, okay? You just can't get around a superstar that's a free agent at age 27. Now, another similarity, which isn't great, is they both have had a little problem staying on the field because of injury. So are they injury prone because they've had a couple injuries, or is it just the nature of playing sports and you're getting hurt? When you're going to, if you're going to sign Correa, it's going to be a 10-year deal. Okay. Are the Cubs willing to make a 10-year commitment at $30 million, $32 million a year for Correa? That's going to be the price they asked for. Whether they get it or not, David, you know, will he be playing with the New York Yankees or the Dodgers? Will Seager be at one or the other place?
That's where I think you're onto it, Bruce. The Yankees getting involved and prioritizing shortstop as their number one offseason need this week, as we heard from Brian Cashman, or at least those were the reports. That tells me that if they want Carlos Correa, they're going to spend whatever is necessary to get him. And I do think they outspend everybody. That doesn't mean that Tom Ricketts might not be intrigued or Jed Hoyer may not be interested, but I just don't think they're in a position where they're going to outspend the Yankees given all the needs they have. They're more likely to disperse the budget around several players rather than just that one, because whatever Carlos Correa signs for, the first number at least is going to be a three, right? It's going to be a $300 million minimum deal for 10 years, likely, and then some.
It's probably going to start with a four. Might be a four.
Yeah.
You know, it might be 10 years, $400 million, okay? If you think about how much money that really is. I mean, it's bigger than your salary, and it's bigger than Mully's salary. It's humongous. It's just, you know, $400 million. You know, we're approaching, for one guy, you know, we're talking about franchises that 10 years, you know, 15 years ago sold for less than that, you know. So, I mean, it's a mind-boggling. And when you look at these players and you realize they're not machines and that you can count on them to give you 10 good years. I mean, what position player can you point to that's ever gotten that type of deal that's really been worth it for a long period of time?
Bryce Harper would like a word, Bruce. He thinks he still can be worth the deal.
Right.
He's in the middle
I think, you know, A-Rod's kind of comes to mind as somebody that you know, had long-term deals that it worked for. But, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the Pujols situation and how that ended. You're looking at Mike Trout being hurt almost every year now. Just at age 30, he's been in baseball 10 years. Can you believe that Mike Trout is a 10-year veteran? But are you going to bet with like eight or 9 years left on that contract that he's going to be giving you everything he has in the same quality in the from next 3, 4, or 5 years? I mean, it's a real big risk when you do that.
That's what we think. What do you think? 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's where we find Mike in Hillside. Welcome to the Score. Jim in Hillside.
That's it. It's Jack.
Yeah, okay, Jack.
Third time's a charm. There you go. So I wanted to comment on what Bruce originally brought up, what you've been talking about. I mean, I could talk about the Cubs, too. There's a lot going on. And, in fact, I appreciate the fact that I just recently found that you guys do this all winter. And it reminds me, Bruce, of someone probably you worked with, I would guess, when the only sports baseball reporting during the winter was when Jerome Holtzman started doing that. Is that right? It became our first full-time baseball writer in Chicago?
Well, I don't know if he was the first full-time baseball writer, but Jerome had the greatest sources in the world, and kept us all informed as to what was going on in the game. Jerome was probably, in my mind, up there with the top two or three baseball writers in the history of the game. But that's just my opinion. But go ahead with your thoughts.
Okay, well, I will. And you're in that vein in terms of being someone in Chicago we look to for, you know, for that type of authority. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the compliment.
So as far as the three areas of need, everyone's the consensus I agree with, but right field to me, I don't understand why the White Sox would spend any resources there and instead appreciate what they've developed and what they already have between Adam Engel, Greg Vaughn, Sheets, Luis Robert, Eloy, and there isn't a Yolki Cespedes is about to come up. Why would you possibly spend money on an outfielder? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, Jack, that's a great question.
It's a great question.
What do you think, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, Jack is right. As a matter of fact, I talked with the White Sox official about right field during the week, and they said, yeah, you know, look, we have Vaughn, and we have Sheets, and Adam Engel is a good defender, but, you know, maybe we want one guy that does that all. You know, we need not three guys, because if La Russa has to piece together a game where Vaughn's in right to start the game and they're in a 2-1 game, they're holding the lead and they bring in Engel in the last part of the inning or last part of the game and the game gets tied, you would prefer Vaughn being in the lineup rather than Engel. So the answer is, if there's somebody out there that's a right fielder that can be all in one, then they can have the depth with Vaughn and they can have the depth with Sheets, and they can get them more involved in their natural positions of first base and DH. One thing we know for sure, David, the White Sox must improve their defense, okay? That was a flaw. That's something that has to be dealt with in the offseason. It's not like they have bad athletes at positions, but they, other than in center field and in shortstop, where Anderson has improved dramatically, I would say Moncada had a very good second half of the year defensively as well. Otherwise, I think, you know, second base wasn't right. Abreu is okay at first base. He's fine, but catcher needs solidification. You know, they need to be a better, well-run, well-oiled defensive team. And if a great right fielder defensively is a part of that, and he can hit as well, I think they have to at least look for that.
He's Bruce. I'm David. Callers, hang on. We'll get to as many as we can in the final segment. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine, wrapping things up here shortly. But we still have some things to discuss, Bruce. We've had a good show. Mike Rizzo, Russ Dorsey, and just some conversation about what's going to happen to the Cubs and White Sox this offseason. Wanted to ask you again, because I think this is an important point we don't want to overlook. Not all the activity is going to be free agent activity. There could be some trades made, and both in acquiring things you need and maybe unloading things you don't any longer. Where are the Cubs on Ian Happ, and how much should we read into his strong finish at a time where the pressure was off? And I think that when you look at a player like Ian Happ, you do wonder about the connection between pressure and production.
It's a great question, David. I will tell you from my my work in Carlsbad talking to GMs that there are a number of teams that have asked about the availability of Ian Happ. And I don't think anybody should be surprised about that. He has 2 years remaining of arbitration. He's a switch-hitting outfielder. He's a guy that has been shown to be up and down in his career. Way, way, way ups and way, way, way down to the point where he was even sent to the minor leagues in 2019 for 3.5 months to start the year. Came back and had a terrific, I'm talking about terrific, August and September of that year. Started out 2020 as the Chicago Cubs' hottest hitter. The last month of 2020, he hit under 200. And then the start of this year, the roller coaster again. First three and a half months, nothing, hitting 175, and then one of the hottest hitters in baseball for the last month and a half. You tell me if you figured out who Ian Happ is. Other teams think they have and are making offers and having conversations with the Cubs about the availability of Ian Happ. I know the Miami Marlins are one of those teams.
Bruce, you see it all the time in sports. You wonder how a change of scenery will affect or maybe bring out the best in somebody who, you know, is traded for reasons that because they didn't live up to expectations. And the expectations were high here for Ian Happ. It was a first-round draft pick. And I always have wondered if he's a cerebral player. He's a good guy because you know he's always going to be intense. But you wonder about him being wrapped too tightly. And you wonder about that effect on his performance. And I wonder if he were traded to somewhere else and, like, he exhales and says, okay, that's in the past. You wonder if he would flourish elsewhere. I wonder how much of that is generating some of the discussion with teams that wonder how he would be for them.
Well, you know, there's other things metrics-wise that people really like about him. He wasn't afraid to take on the leadoff role for the Chicago Cubs. He had some success in that before the beginning of this year. He does take a walk. He is somebody that you can look at and say he can hit for us anywhere 1 through 5 in the lineup if we know that he is going in all cylinders. And all cylinders is a very high level. Fourth cylinders is a very low level where you have a guy that's prone to striking out one out of every four times, that is seeing pitches that he should swing at that he's not, that is defending not to the caliber that he could, being switched from center to left field. So this is a Bruce Levine scouting report on Ian Happ. And if you asked me, is he worth a starting pitcher who has a great upside and contract control for the next 3, 4 to 5 years?
Yes.
Thank you.
100 times yes. Let's see
agree. At least at the end of the show, we agree on something.
That's great, Bruce. Twice a show. That's a guarantee. Maybe. Maybe. I'm not guaranteeing anything about next week. Let's squeeze in a quick call out on our BetQL Score listener line. Mike is on the north side. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to the Score.
If you can get a starting pitcher with good control for the next 4 years for half, you do it in 2 seconds. Question, what is their plans with Swindell and what is his contract? And also, Ricketts says we're going to be competitive. It's impossible when you have so many holes to fill. Bruce, what pitchers that they picked up during all these trades do you see possibly getting a shot in the rotation next year? And they're not going to be competitive. I just would like to see them build next year and then be ready for 23. So, again, Swindell, the rotation, what guys they traded for you think that's going to be in the rotation, and that's it for now.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, Bruce? I don't know. I don't see any of the pitchers right now necessarily approaching the rotation. As far as Swindell, he's under contract forever. If you want him for the next 5 years, you got him. His contract is a minimum.
Bruce, I think there's actually a clause. He will pay the Cubs to stay on the roster for the next 18 months at least.
And what a breath of fresh air Frank Schwindel was. I'm hoping that his career continues to be that. It was a real feel-good for baseball fans, not just Cub fans, but to see the smile on this guy's face and the guy that struggled in the minor leagues for 7.5 years before he made it big time with the Cubs. So
I would just say hello to your opening day first baseman. That's the guy who's going to be your opening day first baseman.
I agree.
Get your Schwindy City t-shirts now if you haven't already. I think Frank Schwindel might get a cut of those in his contract, which is from now until forever, according to Bruce. Breaking news here on the Score.
You know, keep in mind, making $600,000 for a guy that's been making $50,000 to $60,000 the last 3 years, you know, he hit the lotto. He's the happiest guy in the world. You know, in perspective, of real world and real jobs, Frank Schwindel is one of the happiest people you might know right now.
As he should be. And Bruce, that's a good way to end this on a happy note, talking about the Schwindy City and Frank Schwindel. And we would like to thank all of our guests on our program today. Mike Rizzo, Russell Dorsey, thank you very much. Brandon Fryer for keeping us on the show, Bruce. And you, again, delivered the way that we always know that you will.
David, it's always a pleasure. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also on our website, I write Sox and Cubs at 670thescore.com, our website. David, have a wonderful week. And don't forget about Saturday Suckage next. Brandon, you did a great job for us today.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Mullen Haw, 5 to 9 every day here on The Score. Thanks for listening to Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We the people of the ballpark are all in on baseball. We deserve dingers and dogs, sunshine and a beat, a place to take it all in and let it all out. Baseball for the people. Baseball is something else. Visit MLB.com/tickets and spend this summer with us. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.